Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this show, we highlight people's stories, we celebrate your successes, and together, we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peter Santoscano. Welcome to episode 48 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Friday, May 22nd, 2020. In today's show, I serve up some well-needed good news. In February, I traveled to Washington, D.C. for the first ever all-conservative Citizens Climate Training and Lobby Days. Nearly 100 people showed up from all over the country, young and older. They met with Republican staff and members of Congress to talk about climate change and a path forward. In today's show, I share excerpts from those conversations. I also follow up with two conservative climate advocates so that we can go a little deeper. You will learn what has changed in the Republican Party, especially for climate advocates lobbying conservative members of Congress. Guests will share what Republicans bring to the climate conversations and the conservative values that compel them to pursue effective ways to transform our energy economy. You will also receive advice and hear the ways these conservatives are speaking with their family, friends, and elected leaders about climate change. First, though, let's hear a little bit of what people who attended February's conservative training and lobby days had to say.
Cindy Burbank. I was originally a skeptic about climate change. In my government job, I had to deal with it some. And the more I learned about it and delved into it, the more I said, this is real. It's really significant. And we've got to have conservatives on board as well as Democrats if we're going to solve it. Plus, as a conservative, I really want a solution that doesn't grow government and that it'll be effective, but it gets businesses and individuals making good choices.
Isuru Seneviratne. In this conservative climate outreach, we stressed our conservative values in fiscal responsibility, in government not picking in winners and losers, in systemic change that grows jobs and the economy. I think that resonated with the officers that we met. We are there pitching a conservative solution to climate change, which also happens to be very equitable.
So my name is Jacob Abel. In terms of our solution, I think it's the most economically viable. Growing up, struggling during the recession, valuing a dollar, I think this is the best way to go about it.
So my name is Carlos Sims. Within my realm of understanding and of my social group, which is a lot of conservatives, so we share this concern for climate change just like the left does. The only difference is that the left has really dominated this issue, trying to find ways to mitigate the situation and trying to lobby. And here we are just now getting into the game.
Yeah, my name is Katie Zakreski. I would need to remind not just the Republican Party, but everybody who's active in politics and everybody who's here in this country, that we will make a lot more progress if we treat people that we might not agree with respect, and at least understand that they probably have a reason for believing what they do, just like you've got a reason for believing what you do. Might not make it right in your mind, that's okay. But you need to be able to foster a healthy, productive conversation with them so that you can at least see where they're coming from and kind of acknowledge that in some of the things that you do.
So, when it comes to climate, what has changed for Republicans?
The era of climate denialism among Republicans is over. You do not need to dispute climate science with Republicans. Today, the question is, what is the conservative response to the risk associated with climate change?
That's Alex Flint, the executive director at Alliance for Market Solutions. Along with a panel of other Republicans, Alex spoke at the Citizens Climate Conservative Gathering in February.
In 2018, we met with 82 Republican members of Congress. One of them denied that the climate was changing. Met with 171 in 2019, not a single one said that the climate wasn't changing. Now, what to do about it, that's one argument. But frankly, the denier community is shrinking. It is not influential. The CO2 Coalition was interviewed in what paper? Was it Axios or National Journal? One of them, and the executive director complained they couldn't get meetings on Capitol Hill.
He told me it was taken out of context.
There's no context in which, as an advocate, you want to admit you can't even get a meeting.
When Alex Flint approaches a Republican lawmaker, they take the meeting. He previously served as staff director of the U.S. Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources. He was the senior vice president of governmental affairs at the Nuclear Energy Institute. Oh, and he was a member of President Trump's transition team.
We find that when we meet with Republican members, we are in the role of counselor more than we're in the role of lobbyist. I lead with a discussion about climate science. You need to take the IPCC report seriously. Last year's report says that if Paris is fully implemented, and it is not on track to be fully implemented, temperature will go up 5.2 to 6 degrees Fahrenheit. By the way, I always talk in Fahrenheit because nobody actually understands what Celsius is.
To talk more about what has changed in the Republican Party, I reached out to the man who organized February's Conservative Lobby Day. Meet Jim Tolbert. He is the Conservative Outreach Director for Citizens Climate Education. Jim has degrees in geology with a focus on environmental geochemistry. After he graduated, he was hired by an environmental consulting company.
Worked there for 28 years doing a lot of environmental studies and environmental cleanups for historic and current releases of chemicals to the environment.
Organizing the cleanup of waste sites. So wait, is Jim one of those green eco-warrior environmentalists?
I could tap you into some people who would say, no, Jim is not an environmentalist. The clientele I worked for were large corporations. I spent a lot of time helping Dow Chemical with their facilities and their historic releases. They'd been around since the 1890s in Michigan and did things that were perfectly legal that really had a lot of impact on the Tittabawassee River and the area around Midland. And I helped them look at what do you do now that we understand that there's consequences from it. I worked a lot with oil and gas and chemical companies. I was on the board of the directors for the Michigan Chemistry Council for 20 years, 6 years as the president of the board, supporting really high quality jobs for the chemical industry in Michigan. I'm very proud of the cleanups I led and was part of in the teams and the projects I worked on, but I could definitely go out and find some people at the regulatory agencies that might not agree that my track record would say I was an environmentalist.
And when it comes to climate change, Jim is quick to point out that conservative leaders were some of the first and most vocal advocates for addressing global warming.
I would encourage anybody listening to this to go look at Margaret Thatcher's speeches to the UN. Margaret Thatcher was a staunch conservative, the Iron Lady, who, if you go back to that time, had a lot of people that were not conservative that really did not like her. She had a background in chemistry and really understood the issue and gave some very solid speeches on why conservatives need to address climate change from the very beginning.
Until recently, we've always thought that whatever progress humanity makes, our planet would stay much the same. That may no longer be true. The way we generate energy, the way we use land, the way industry uses natural resources and disposes of waste, the way our populations multiply, those things taken together are new in the experience of the Earth. They threaten to change the atmosphere above us and the sea around us. That is the scale of the global challenge.
Jim recognizes something changed, and his party had become infamous for its climate skepticism.
I think there were some very intelligent people that were rather savvy in shifting the dialogue on the right. My view is those shifts weren't in a constructive direction, but they happened. Since then, we've been trying to dig this out of a partisan divide issue where people view climate change as associated with a few key individuals on the left, and therefore it must be a liberal issue, as opposed to climate change is really just a question of looking at the world and figuring out what's happening and responding to that and saying, okay, what's an appropriate response?
Having conservatives speak with other conservatives makes a big difference. This is why Jim organized the February event.
We held a climate advocate training that was specifically focused more on conservatives than our traditional climate advocate training. And then a concurrent breakout sessions and training, just like normally, and the lobby day practice. And then went up to the Hill and divided into teams and met with members of Congress where we had a constituent present, Republican members only, So we always had a constituent in the room, and all of the teams were all conservative. The tone of, and the direction of a conversation has the opportunity to go in different directions. When the people in the room are talking about protecting our party and wanting our party to have a future and agreeing with a lot of the points and concerns a staff, senior staff person or a member brings up, starting the conversation from there, from that base of shared values, can foster the extended growth of the relationships we're trying to build based on trust and communication with our members of Congress.
Mary Lawing was one of the people who traveled across the country to be part of this conservative lobbying effort.
I currently live in Scottsdale, Arizona, but I grew up in Kentucky.
She made sure the congressional staffers she met with knew she was a lifelong Republican.
I tried to bring some humor to that, and I said this year is the 40th anniversary of my 18th birthday when I registered as a Republican. Now, I think that we've come a long way, and that the Republicans are coming a long way in that regard, from not looking at the science or ignoring the science to now embracing the science and embracing some form of solution to it.
And what was her message to these Republicans on the Hill?
Well, I think that we don't need a solution that swings the pendulum from one extreme to where we're doing very little right now to where we just go kind of off the charts and dismantle everything. We don't want to dismantle oil companies and the fossil fuel companies. We want a transition. We want a slow transition in this country to more responsible forms of energy without blowing the whole thing up.
Like Mary Lawing, her fellow Republicans and right-leaning independents bring their conservative values to the climate conversation. In doing so, they want to push their party to develop large-scale policies that will make a big impact. The climate policies Republican leaders have proposed are an encouraging first step, but according to Alex Flint, the party must do much, much more.
One of the things that we are observing is an embracing of what I think is generally referred to as the innovation agenda. We are going to innovate our way out of this. What's missing from the innovation agenda sometimes, and I can't apply this universally, but frequently, is something that ensures that innovation occurs at the scale necessary to actually address the problem at the scale it needs to be. And so what is happening, in my opinion, is that innovation is becoming the political response because it addresses the near-term need to say something, but it may be inadequate. There are certainly those who respond that this is actually a very good step, that some of these Republicans are looking for fig leaves on this and they're embracing innovation as a fig leaf. I tell them that I understand that only naked people look for fig leaves. So they recognize that they have a vulnerability here. But what you have to make sure is that they recognize the scale that has to accompany that innovation.
To help move the party along, new, younger voices are needed. The other day, I followed up with one of these young Republicans. Meet Jacob Abel. Jacob is back home in North Carolina after finishing his senior year at Seton Hall University, where he studied international relations.
When I first turned 18, was allowed to vote, I started as an independent, but I quickly changed to a Republican within a few months. A big fiscal conservative, so very much concerned about the national debt and having a balanced budget. For me, I really started learning about climate change in my freshman year of high school in my Earth and Environmental Science class. I had a really good teacher who really presented the science of it. Sort of fast-forwarding to the summer before my senior year at high school, I went to a camp at Long Island University in Brooklyn. The subject of that camp, it was an international relations camp, was climate change. And, you know, we debated the different policies from different points of view of different countries. Then moving forward, going into college, studying international relations, it's obviously probably the biggest global issue there is. And as I went further through college, I sort of discovered my political identity a bit more as I got older. Not hearing enough Republicans at the table and hearing enough conservative policy, kind of why I got involved.
Through Representative Bob Inglis's conservative climate group, Republic Ian, Jacob deepened his commitment to speaking to fellow Republicans about climate and the future of the party. He too is seeing big shifts in the GOP. Even so, like Alex Flint, Jacob believes the party is at risk for not thinking big enough.
Republicans are definitely want to, I think, address it. They're seeing sort of the writing on the wall in terms of we need some sort of policy to offer to people and how we're going to address climate change. I may disagree a bit on the aggressiveness of that policy and not being aggressive enough, I should say. But it's definitely changed because I think Republican leadership notices that they're going to lose young voters if they don't have some sort of policy to address it.
As a fiscal conservative, Jacob wants his party to champion plans that make financial sense, specifically carbon pricing.
In terms of looking at sort of some of the climate plans of the Democratic candidates in this past or upcoming cycle, they wanted to spend trillions of dollars, taxpayer dollars, which I just don't think is realistic. And, you know, listening to some of the solutions at the UN and things of that sort, spending trillions of dollars, and first of all, asking where you're going to get this money from, but also I just think there's better ways of going about of addressing this problem, and I think the free market can do it. I think the free market and private enterprise innovates better than anything else on the planet. Giving them the tools and the incentives to do so is just the key, and I think that's the most important point to sell.
Adding a dividend to the carbon pricing then makes it attractive to Republicans and also politically viable.
But I think it's definitely the fact that you're offering something that's within their set of values, but also if you get down to the economic points, it can be very beneficial to the economy and it doesn't hurt people. Now, a lot of times when you say carbon tax, a lot of Republicans will freak out, but I think based off our bill and our model, you are, with the dividend approach, giving that money back and it can benefit lower to middle income families without really necessarily wrecking the economy.
Jacob recognizes that the messages about climate to conservatives need to be different from what they've been hearing from the left. He advises against using fear tactics.
That sort of language, that very sort of apocalyptic language, has been, I think, more damaging to the climate movement in terms of trying to get Republicans on board more than anything else. But in terms of what I use, I kind of both go back to the history of the party in terms of the Teddy Roosevelts, the Ronald Reagans, the Richard Nixons, who all established good environmental policy as Republicans. So I think it's sort of picking up the mantle that our party has always sort of upheld in terms of conservation and having a clean environment, but also looking at carbon pricing specifically as a market-based solution. Those sorts of things speak to conservatives and their values, and you're not necessarily speaking, oh my God, the world's going to end, or you're not attacking them. You're selling something, which I think is the key to any policy discussion.
Another young Republican I met at the conference also leads with her values when talking about climate change. She was just finishing her undergraduate work at the University of Arkansas.
Yeah, my name is Katie Zakreski. I am a double major in criminal justice and anthropology. I'm hoping to really do a lot of policy work, continue to do kind of what I've been doing, but just on a larger scale within the state. But I was a volunteer on a solar energy campaign for Audubon, Arkansas. The way that I related it to them was being like, look at all these good financial benefits that are going to impact our state positively, that are going to help people get jobs. These jobs can't be outsourced. You can't outsource the sun. Just things like that, like showing people this is for the common man and woman. This is exactly what we want as people, as voters, as Arkansans, as Americans.
Here in Katy, I am reminded that people can care about the same issue, in this case climate change, for very different reasons. Alex Flint stresses that conversations addressing climate change need to be grounded in values. In fact, he believes conservatives are at an advantage here.
In the face of the risks associated from climate change, I think conservatives and conservative values can lead and be better at addressing these issues than liberal values. And I believe that we can get to that point where that is evident to everyone. So my counsel is talk about your values with members, scale or frame the problem the way you see it. I personally am very concerned about the energy requirements of the globe as we approach 9 or 10 billion people. I believe there's a moral and economic imperative that people have access to energy because it extends life expectancy and reduces infant mortality and improves education and standard of living. And I believe that if governments don't provide for that energy, there will be political disruption and governments will fall over these issues and all their associated issues. And so we have to come up with climate policies that reflect that reality.
He also offers helpful advice for volunteer lobbyists to speak to Republican lawmakers in light of this shift away from climate denial.
If you go in there defensive about the science or thinking they're going to challenge you, frankly, I think you're preparing for a conversation you're not going to have. The conversation to have is, okay, now that we don't deny the science anymore, what do we do about it? What is our alternative to the Green New Deal? That's where members need help. They need like simple help. Like if you get asked about climate change at a town hall meeting, what should you say? Kind of help. A lot of them are not particularly conversant on climate right now. Environmentalists didn't go see them. Corporations that were lobbying about them on other issues didn't want to waste a bullet on climate. For some time, I had a Republican senator say, Alex, you're the first person to come talk to me about climate change who wasn't hoping I'd lose my reelection. That was 2.5 years ago. Go all the way up to 3 weeks ago when the House Republican Conference held its first policy meeting of the year and the topic was climate change and what the party's position should be on climate change. And Kevin McCarthy said, we can no longer be deniers or we will not win elections going forward. Last year, the orthodoxy changed. We are not the party of deniers, but we haven't really figured out what we're for.
Jim Talbert, who organized the conference and started the Citizens Climate Conservative Fellows Program, shares his own thoughts about communicating climate to fellow Republicans.
One thing many people on the right clearly hear when they hear people talk about climate is another issue where a federal government is trying to come in and tell me what to do and put constraints on what I am allowed to do. Another piece they hear, and I see a lot of people propagating this, is what this is about either living like we used to live in the past or us living with less. What you're trying to do is make it so I can't afford to turn my lights on at night and I can't afford to heat my house. And when I can no longer afford to do those things, you're going to feel that successful. The way some people can present a carbon tax is it almost comes across that way. Like, yeah, what we want to do is increase your power bill so that you can no longer afford to heat your house. And then you'll emit less. Isn't that a good thing? But you'll have a little bit more money so you can buy a burger if you bicycle to McDonald's. That's not too far off from some messaging I hear. What we've seen right now with COVID is we've shut our economy down and our emissions are decreasing. And that is exactly how we don't want to address climate change. What we don't want is a policy that shuts our economy down to reduce emissions. What we want is a policy that lets us grow our economy with an abundance of energy and an abundance of jobs for people and a growing GDP, which is what we have in a price on carbon when you return that money back into people's pockets, because then they go spend it.
And what about the other citizens' climate volunteers and liberal or progressive climate advocates? How can they be effective and informed climate advocates when addressing conservatives? Jim offers some advice.
A lot of time listening and asking follow-up questions in a non-judgmental way, as opposed to a conversation about trying to convince the person they need to be a CCL member or they need to support a bill. I've heard a lot of CCL members say, yeah, I do know some conservatives that, you know, that are in your trust circle. Ask for their advice. Say, hey, you know this is an important issue to me. You know I go to DC once a year or so. One, I'd like to understand your views on it, have that, but have another angle of saying, hey, I'm really interested in how to approach other conservatives. Don't turn it into I'm trying to convince you I'm right conversation.
The Citizens Climate Conservative Lobby and training event happened in early February, nearly a month before we started hearing about deaths from COVID-19 in the U.S. There were still no social distancing guidelines. Most of us did not yet realize the impact the virus was about to have on society, the economy, the political process, and in our own lives. Katie from Little Rock, Arkansas, squeezed in the visit to DC in the middle of a very busy semester on a campus where she was also student council president. It was the day of the State of the Union address when I asked Katie, if you had a few words to say to the nation, what might you say? Now, as we are in the midst of one of the greatest threats Americans and people all over the globe have ever faced, Katie's answer is all the more powerful and timely.
We need to stop focusing on what's best for our party and focus on what's best for our country and what's best for our country's people and the people that we ultimately serve. We're stuck in what feels like a system of hate right now. I think that people have forgotten that we're all equal, that we all need to see eye to eye with each other. I think that people are afraid of being attacked right now for their political views, so much so that they just go straight for the defensive instead of being like, okay, this is what I believe. What do you believe? before we can really make any progress, we're going to need to enter a state of healing and step back and realize that we're all Americans. That even if your individual values differ along that spectrum, that's okay. But our first priority is to our people. And it's to our country and whatever we need to do to make that better.
Many thanks to my guest. In the show notes, I have a Dig Deeper section where you can find links to articles written by conservatives concerned about climate change. There's also a link to Margaret Thatcher's 1989 climate change speech to the UN. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. On the right, you will see Citizens Climate Radio listed. Click on it and look for episode 48. Now, it is time for our puzzler question. In a Zoom call, you share your renewed commitment to promote climate solutions and ask your friend Gretchen to join your group. Gretchen slowly shakes her head and says, "Yeah, you know I'm concerned about the planet too, but with so many people affected by COVID-19, I think we're just going to have to deal with that first. Climate action is very important, but for so many people right now, there are more pressing issues to address." The dilemma so many of us face right now is that climate change has been eclipsed by an immediate threat to humanity, coronavirus. So how are you dealing with this? How are you navigating this new landscape? How are you adapting? I want to hear your answer. Get back to me by June 17th, 2020. You can leave a voicemail at the following number, 518-595-9414, plus one if you're calling from outside the USA. That number again is 518-595-9414. Or you can email your answer to radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Citizens Climate Radio. If you want to connect with other climate advocates, please join us for the Citizens Climate International Virtual Conference. It will be held online June 13th. I'm thrilled to announce that I will lead an interactive breakout group telling a new kind of climate story. To find out more and to register for free, visit citizensclimatelobby.org/2020-June-conference. That's citizensclimatelobby.org/2020-June-conference. I will have a link in the show notes, don't worry. Citizens Climate Radio is written and produced by me, Peter Santoscano. Other technical support from Ricky Bradley and Brett Cease. Social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Monterano, Flannery Winchester, Allison Cabisco, and Steve Volk. Moral support from Madeline Pera. This show is fueled by your enthusiasm. Thank you for tweeting and posting and sharing with your friends and colleagues. You can find Citizens Climate Radio wherever you listen to podcasts, which includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, you know, you get the idea. We're in lots of places. You can also listen at Northern Spirit Radio. We have an active Twitter presence as well. Follow us at Citizens C Radio. That's Citizens, the letter C, Radio, at Citizens C Radio. And you can tweet to me directly at P2Sun, the letter P, the number 2, S-O-N, at P2Sun. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see info about our puzzler and find links to our guest. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.
Hello, I'm Claudia Romo Edelman.
And I'm Edie Lash. We're the hosts of Global Goals Cast, a podcast that asks how we can change the world.
In every episode, we take on the world's biggest challenges, from global warming, poverty, gender equity, good jobs, health, and education.
And we don't just identify the problems, we find solutions and speak with people who are making a difference. And you can make a difference too. Mm-hmm. Subscribe to Global Goals Cast at globalgoalscast.org, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.